and I don't mean this to be arrogant, but like conquered the external world, right? I kind of got to a point where I had more than enough money that I would need and all the physical things that I needed, and really felt like I had a handle on, you know, the physical world and the external world. But the next challenge was the internal, right? And I think that's something a lot of us never get to. It's really like, you know, we live with, I think, the equivalent of a broken ankle or a sprained arm for our whole lives. And in some cases, because we don't address it, it gets worse. But the tough part is it's an unseen part of ourselves, right? It's probably, you know, in terms of our overall happiness and success, it may be even more important.
It still hits, I don't miss it. It's go, 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 like a go, go flow. And I'm almost done. And I told you so. When I throw these flows, like it's Rochambeau. And I ain't too close, it's Joe Smoke goes. And I'm on my grind, that is all the time. I do not do breaks, that's right, I stay in dry. And look, I'm back with a little bit of that. A little more cash than I came in with. Ready, that cat is out that bag. But I still ask the boy, got skills. I don't need her, I don't need him, I don't need help with me. I got this. I can sing songs, I can spit raps, and I can do both, even do this. Swear.
This episode is brought to you by Sweat Tent, the pioneers of the portable wood-burning sauna. Did you know that using the sauna 3 to 4 times per week could reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease by up to 50% and make you 60% less likely to experience Alzheimer's disease? That's why I've been a big fan of the sauna for years. But having to go to a crowded gym to do it isn't ideal. And all the at-home options are bulky and expensive. That's why I only use the Sweat Tent for my sauna needs. It's the most storable and affordable wood-burning sauna on the market. It not only takes minutes to set up, but it can reach 200 degrees Fahrenheit in 30 minutes or less. So whether you're enjoying it yourself in your backyard, with friends, or in need of a reliable sauna on the go, Sweat Tent is your best choice for the most portable, storable, and enjoyable outdoor sauna experience. All On The Stacks listeners will receive $100 off when you use code OTS. Visit sweattent.com today to get $100 off your purchase with code OTS at checkout. Again, that's sweattent.com to get $100 off with code OTS. Sweat Tent, helping you fire up your home wellness routine. This episode is brought to you by FitAF. If you haven't already noticed, I live and breathe entrepreneurship. Whether it's launching new ventures, attending pitch meetings, or mentoring budding entrepreneurs, my schedule is jam-packed. And that's where FitAF steps in. Their menu changes weekly, offering a variety of chef-inspired meals designed by nutrition experts using only the best quality ingredients, keeping me fueled and focused. Their vast selection of meals has you covered for all types of dietary restrictions and diet plans, including keto, paleo, vegetarian, vegan, gluten-free, and more. As an On The Stacks listener, enjoy our exclusive offer. Get 20% off your first order of 7 meals or more when you use code OTS at checkout at fitafnutrition.com. Again, that's code OTS for 20% off your first order of 7 meals or more at fitafnutrition.com. Healthy meals and seamless nutrition, keeping entrepreneurs at the top of their game. What's up, podcast? I'm your host, Bill Corcoran Jr. here in the Sweat Tent studio. Patrick Sandone, welcome to the On The Stacks podcast.
Bill, thanks for having me.
Hey, I appreciate you making the trip all the way. I know, you know, between Luzerne County and Lackawanna County, there's kind of like that line that's like you kind of have to go through like a checkpoint. You might have to show your passport, you know, maybe go through a metal detector, whatever it is. But I know it's always a difficult thing to get people from Scranton to Wilkes-Barre and Wilkes-Barre to Scranton. So appreciate you making the far trip in.
Yeah, it's like passing through the Berlin Wall.
Something, right? It's a trip. You know, we were just talking a little before we started about some trips, and you've traveled all over the world. We were sharing some of our travel experiences, and you probably never came across any aliens though yet, at least.
So a really good, funny story. So I drove around the perimeter of the United States when I was like 26.
The whole perimeter?
The whole perimeter.
Get the hell out of here.
I did Scranton to Boston, Boston to Seattle, Seattle to San Diego, San Diego to Florida, and Florida back up to Scranton. But I drove from San Diego to Arizona at night. I did it at night because I had a car that had like a soft top on it, didn't have air conditioning. And I think the daytime temperature that like period of time in Arizona might've been like 110 degrees.
Hmm.
So we did it at night to kind of, you know, it was a little bit cooler. And actually it was so hot even at night that we had to get ski goggles to be able to drive.
No,
because
way.
Even the wind, it felt like you had a hair dryer
really
right in your face. But we drove through all these army bases at night, and I have this on video. there was this light in the sky, and it was just sitting there, and it was big, and it was like a big orb. And we pulled over, and I got out my video camera, and we were videoing it, and it started moving in a way that, like, you wouldn't.
It was erratic.
Yeah, it wasn't like a traditional aircraft. It would kind of move to the side, and then it disappeared. And then all of a sudden, you could see these lines of light coming out of it, and there were what looked like explosions on the ground. It was a good distance away.
You have video.
I have video.
What year was this? Do you remember?
It was 1998.
So you had a pretty serious camcorder back then, I guess.
Oh, huh? Yeah. It was like one of those, you
big,
know.
Big. Was it like a shoulder?
It wasn't a shoulder one, but it was probably,
like a small, like.
Yeah, it was a good size.
Did you record the whole trip?
Yeah, I have 20 hours of video.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And actually back then, my brother, who's a big techie, he built a website, and we didn't have a way.
So you were like a vlogger before vloggers.
Yeah.
You were like an OG vlogger.
So he built me a website, and I would FedEx him overnight pictures. So I'd have my film developed, right? So I didn't have a digital camera. I don't know if they existed back then. Had the pictures developed overnight and FedExed him like 10 pictures every week.
Wow.
And then he'd scan them and put them on the website.
No way.
Yeah.
So all right, so you got the footage. So you have it on video of this
yeah.
you know, possibly
yeah.
alien.
Yeah.
Life,
I mean, well,
or aircraft or
it's you know, I
UFO.
Yeah, it was probably like an advanced military aircraft. But it definitely, you know, it definitely looked like a UFO for sure, because it was able to hover in the air and then move very quickly, you know, vertically and horizontally at rapid speeds. And it was cool. It was cool. We also went to, on the trip, we went to Roswell, New Mexico, and we visited the site.
Did you?
Where supposedly like the aliens landed.
Yeah. How was that?
It was cool. The neat thing that happened, I was with a friend of mine who's actually grew up in Dunmore. He was in San Diego visiting some friends, and he drove back with me. And we found a rock that looked exactly like an alien head. And we donated it to the Alien Museum in Roswell.
I love it.
Yeah.
So you're more into aliens than I thought.
You know,
I was joking beforehand.
I'm open-minded.
Yeah,
I'm open-minded.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, me too. And I like that. I think that's what's.
Yeah, it's fun to think about those things.
Yeah, and I think, you know, having a platform, you know, like this show, for example. I mean, it's you know, like I said, I like to talk about interesting things that maybe, you know, people may not either have in a typical business setting or at a, you know, or just at a, you know, over dinner, right? Like,
right.
I mean, I still talk about these things over dinner. I don't know about you, but, but I feel like, you know, having these types of conversations and, you know, just, you know, like you said, just keeping an open mind and just sharing experiences is, I think it's important, you know, and the way that you explained that aircraft, by the way, and I'm sure you probably, you know this because you experience it, but it's very parallel, no pun intended, to, you know, a lot of the other stories that many people have shared over the years, even as recent as like within the last year. I mean, as you know, I'm sure you probably know so many of the stories of, a lot of it's, you know, made very national news over the last year of aircrafts making very similar movements that you just explained. And I think it's just, I don't think it's a coincidence.
Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like, again, that was, you said, what was it?
1990. I want to say 98.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, you know, 26 years ago. And what you experienced seems to be very similar to what a lot of people as of this year have seen and experienced, you know, whether they got it on camera or not. I mean, there's some, you know, I think you probably might know of the one. It's probably very familiar to a lot of people, is that one fighter jet has like that, like it was like that gray orb that just like was,
oh, that's right,
do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It was a fighter jet that had it on video, and it just freaking disappeared. And I mean to be able to move faster and rapidly and, you know, up and down and left and right faster than a fighter jet, I mean there's something there.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. So crazy, but yeah, so I'm excited to have you in and learn a little bit more about some of your experiences. And you've done a lot of things in your careers over the years. So, Where does it start for you? I mean, so after that trip around the country, first of all, what sparked that? Like, why did you do that?
You know, after college, I worked on Wall Street as an investment banker, which is a brutal job. So you're working, maybe 100 hours a week. So basically all you do is work and sleep.
Yeah.
And then I got a new job working for a venture capital firm up in Boston, and I negotiated a couple months off in between just to kind of, take a break. And I always wanted to do that kind of a trip, just explore the country. So I planned out this itinerary, and I called it, the name of it, I think, was 45 Days of Barbed Wire. So it was a 45-day trip, and I had just bought and I still have it, Defender 90, a Land Rover Defender 90, like soft top.
Mm-hmm.
And loaded that up and picked all these different spots I wanted to check out around the United States, and just did what I hadn't done the last couple of years.
Right? All by yourself?
Well, I was the permanent figure on the trip, but I had met up with people.
Couple stops where you had...
Yeah, I met up with people. I had a friend fly in and drive with me for a while. I had a friend who was in San Diego who needed to get back to Scranton, and he just jumped in and he
nice.
Kind of
yeah, yeah.
did the ride
a little
back
carpool.
With me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was fun. Did a bunch of different adventure sports, saw a bunch of different national parks, visited a lot of different people. It was a cool trip.
What'd you take away from most from it?
What did I take away?
Besides the aliens. I mean,
yeah,
that's cool.
Besides the aliens. Yeah, I think it was more, it was just a fun adventure. And I was able to kind of like just check all these things off my bucket list and meet a lot of different people. It was cool to be able to spend time with different people. I was in the Badlands and there was an American Indian reservation there. I got to like meet and talk to a lot of different people there. I picked up like hitchhikers along the way.
When it was probably safer to
yeah,
do that.
Well, I used my judgment, but different, had some good conversations with people. It was just, it was neat to meet a lot of different people and see parts of the country that I've never seen.
And if you probably didn't do it, looking at it back, today, you probably would, if you didn't do that, you'd probably be sitting here today, like regretting that for the rest of your life. Right?
Oh, for sure. It was a good trip. And I have just a lot of photographs. I have 20 hours of video that I took.
We got to bust this video out.
Yeah.
I need to see that. I need to see that.
At least that one part. The video is funny. I did it in like a documentary style. So I interviewed people.
Okay.
So I'd go to different national parks and I would crack jokes with people and interview people. And I dyed my hair blonde. So I used to have more of like a kind of a flat top spiked haircut, and I dyed it blonde. I just always wanted to do that. And then I kind of got back and I re-dyed it back to my normal color.
Is this the normal color?
And went back to work. This is the normal color.
Well, you got cool. I'm jealous of your hair. I am. I mean, I don't have cool hair like you do. So you still got cool hair back then. You still have cool hair now. So no, that's cool. So from, so after that experience, then, you talked about the the investment banking world and what kind of, like, what was that experience like?
It's like business boot camp. You just learn things so thoroughly about the nuts and bolts of business. I think it did set me up for success. I think it's a little over the top. I don't think anyone should work 100 hours a week, but it was a great on-ramp into really understanding business at the highest level. I do think it kind of set me up for success with some of the stuff I had done later. I think a lot of entrepreneurs, the stereotype would be they're not very disciplined and necessarily process oriented and all those things. And I learned all that, which really helped me to scale the businesses that I have started.
Mm. So. Yeah, that's very, very interesting. What you just said there is, most entrepreneurs, you said, aren't process oriented. And I kind of, I experienced that to a degree, coming from my background working in the family business we were talking a little before we started. But, what, you know, in the printing world where I came from, it was very process oriented. So I have a little bit of that, I'll say, like, discipline, yeah. Right? But otherwise, you know, like most entrepreneurs, I feel like we're kind of all over the place all the time.
Yeah.
Right.
I think the biggest mistake I see entrepreneurs make is that they find something and it's working, and then they just start something else because they like that part of the process instead of sticking with it a little more to scale it, because that's where the money comes in. Is once you can get something to scale and you have the infrastructure to be able to and finances to hire people, you can create something that kind of runs itself. And it's the scalability where the money comes in. So I see some people that are entrepreneurs, they own like 5 businesses and each of them is small and each of them requires their attention. And while that's maybe fun, it's not necessarily a good way to make money.
Sure. Yeah. I think that's one that's the hurdle I think that every entrepreneur obviously would love to get over, is that hump of, you know, when you have a startup, you know, you are the business, you're basically doing it all. And then, you know, so essentially it's just a job. It's just a job until you can replace yourself,
right,
as you said, and then get it to become an actual business where it runs itself. And then once it runs itself, and then, you know, at that point you're scaling the company. And
yep.
But I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges that we all face.
Yeah.
You know, or you know, have faced as an entrepreneur is getting ourselves to that next level. So for you in your career and what you've experienced, what was there any turning point for you where you had that, you know, realization of like, okay, hey, I think I might have figured this out, and I think I figured out a way to scale this and really build something much bigger than you ever anticipated?
Yeah, you know, my first startup was Net Driven, and that ended up being really successful. We had a team of over 100 people. We had offices in Minnesota and in Pennsylvania. And we were the world leader in the thing that we did. You know, and I think there's a couple experiences that led up to, number one, me becoming an entrepreneur and seeing that, you know, it's about scaling that that really matters. When I went to Penn, there was a guy that I knew, and he was one of the co-founders of StubHub. And that obviously became
huge,
super successful. I think they sold that for like $300 or $400 million. And, you know, we were having a conversation and he said, you know, the next internet billionaire isn't even born yet. So I think that helped me understand that, you know, there's still plenty of time to build companies in this space, and there's just a lot that's going to happen. And, you know, my grandfather, who was a entrepreneur, he started my family business, which was Sandone Tire. It was interesting. You know, we had lunch, and he knew, I think, he was going to die in the next couple weeks, and he ended up dying like 2 weeks later. But he said he had really no regrets in his life, and he said the one regret that he did have was that he didn't take more risks. And he went through some specific things that opportunities that came up to expand his business, and he didn't take it. And we talked a little bit about some of the things that happened in my family that kind of, I think, led some of my ancestors away from taking risks. But that really like set me off to see, like, you know, not only do I want to do something, but I really want to make it big. I want to make that thing big. And luckily I had the training from doing investment banking and going to Wharton and working as a venture capital to kind of see how to make that happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I am more of a natural entrepreneur. I like getting things started, but then I learned the discipline and processes to also kind of make things scale, and make them repeatable. I think all those things came together to really allow me to scale what we were doing at Net Driven and now what we're doing with Guide.
Yeah. So I want to go back to the risk thing you said about the risk, because I mean, that's always an interesting, you know, topic of conversation. So you say your grandfather had some regrets of not taking more risks.
Yeah, for sure.
And like, and what did you take from that conversation?
Just not playing it safe, because I was struggling with taking that risk at the time. I had gone to business school at Columbia, and I moved back home to take over my family's business and work there for like 2.5-3 years. And I was on the fence about, do I go off on my own or do I stick it out? And, you know, we were talking about some of the challenges of working in a family business and the frustrations. And I think that conversation just solidified in my mind that, no, I've got to really have the idea for what became Net Driven. And it really solidified in my mind that I got to go for it, even though I'm afraid and I've got some reservations and it seems like a big risk. I've just got to trust myself and do it.
Yeah. So was it one of those things that in that moment when you're like, I have this idea, and again, kind of going back to what I said earlier, like with the trip that you made around the country, it was, you know, did you say to yourself like, oh man, if I don't just take this risk and just try this thing, like would I regret it for the rest of my life?
For sure. Yeah. That became clear to me that I just had to do
it. Was that like your, was that like one of your biggest motivating factors to make that jump?
I wouldn't say you know, it wasn't just the fear, like the FOMO, right?
Yeah.
Part of it. It was also, there was passion there that I knew deep in my heart that this is what I was meant to do, you know, and this was kind of my special mojo that I could create businesses from nothing. And I don't think everyone's suited for it. It's interesting, you know, I did a lot of work around, I saw there was some, you know, media that you had about your business. It said the word purpose on it. Did I see that?
Yeah, yeah. So right on the cover art of the show. So the show, I have a tagline. It's called Real Talk on Purpose.
Okay, you know, yeah. And so I've thought a lot about what my individual purpose is, and all the businesses that I've created, done work with you know, experts in terms of discovering the purpose of that institution. But when I think about my own purpose, the function or the part I play in that particular purpose is the initiation, is basically when if you think about, like, I see on your computer, there's a space shuttle, right? So you think about that part, the trip, right? There's the rocket boosters, and the rocket boosters, their purpose is to take it from the launch pad and get it outside of Earth's orbit, right? Where it's then on its own, right? It's safe. It's
served its purpose.
The ship is safe and it can go and do its mission. And I really think of myself as the rocket boosters. I want to take it from the launch pad and get it into a position where it's self-sufficient. And it's interesting with Guide, we're kind of very close to that point. And there's a good likelihood that in the next 6 months, I'm going to step away from the CEO role, assume a chairman role. I've got somebody in the company that's going to take over CEO and maybe, you know, find something else to move from the launch pad into Earth's orbit.
Really cool.
Yeah.
That's exciting. So, yeah. All right. So we're going to come back to that point in a minute, but I want to kind of sort of go back a little. So, you know, when going back to Net Driven, like as far as like your exit, you know, of Net Driven, mm-hmm. like what did that look like? And then I think that'll transition into, you know, how and why you started, you know, the Guide app.
Yeah. So with Net Driven, I just got to a point where it wasn't fun anymore. And it had scaled tremendously.
Like, why wasn't it fun?
Because I think I had gotten in and I had stuck around well past the point where it was safely in orbit and didn't really need the rocket.
You overstayed your welcome.
Yeah. And I think part of it is because I saw the, it was growing 100% every year. And I wanted to ride that out just for economic purposes, right? When, you know, you don't want to sell too early when you're growing at that rate. Leave a lot of money on the table. And I think I still left a lot of money on the table selling it when I did. But I knew that there was other things I needed to do. It was, you know, it was just an overwhelming feeling. And sometimes things aren't necessarily all logical. It was just, you know, an overwhelming intuition and a feeling that it was time to move on. There was more to do. I think and we had gotten some offers from some private equity firms that were, you know, extremely generous and, well above my, you know,
what you ever thought.
Yeah. Whatever thought I'd be making, as a result of that business. I think when I started it, I just really wanted to replace the income that I was walking away from my family's business. That was it. You know, if I could just replace that income, that would have been great. And it, you know, exceeded that, by a
lot.
Vast amount.
Yeah. Yeah. Lot. Yeah. So like you said, like you got to that point where you're like, okay, hey, I don't know if this, you know, maybe it's time for me to move on. And you were able to, like you said, you think you may have even sold maybe a little bit too early though, even though at the same time you were kind of feeling that, you know, you said, yeah, that intuition, like, I think it's time, but now kind of looking back on it, like, Would you have done anything differently?
You know, I don't think it's possible. I mean, you can't change the past. And I try not to entertain those types of thoughts because it just doesn't make sense because it's done. I think it all happened perfectly. I'm very happy with, you know, how it all went down. Yes, I could have stuck around but I think overall my life wouldn't be better. I maybe would have made more money, but I think I would be would have regretted it because money's not the only object of things. Sometimes you just have to follow your passion and do what you're meant to do.
Yeah. So. I think that's very important. And I think, coming from somebody like you who has, you know, accomplished what you've done and the exit, that you've had and everything, I think it's very important. I think for people, especially maybe younger entrepreneurs, to be able to hear what you're saying because, you've lived it, I mean, you've lived it. And, I'm also, I'm again, one of those people that, I subscribe to the same mindset, but at the same time, there's certain people that say, oh, money isn't everything. And like, yes, 100%. But sometimes the people that say that like don't really have context or haven't lived it one way or the other. But at the same time, I've kind of been in the similar position to you, like working for the family business and then going to do something else. Like you said, just looking to try to replace that income and maybe it turns into something bigger. But again, as I shared with you before we started, it's one of those things where, you're comfortable and you're making money and it's like, oh, hey, this is great. But, again, money isn't everything. And then as I shared with you, I had a little, health scare and I'm like, what's this? What is this all for?
Yeah.
And, looking back on it, I'm like, like you said, I have no regrets. I'm glad I did everything the way I did it and everything worked out and it is working out. But again, it's one of those things where you get to that position or that point in your life where you really have to take a step back and look and be like, okay, hey, the money's one thing, but what about my health, physical, mental, what about, family, all that. And there's so many more factors that go into it. And I'm sure you probably experienced some of those things as well. But I think there's so many things that go into that entrepreneurship conversation that a lot of people don't. There's a lot of this world that's not talked about.
Yeah,
sure. And I think having these conversations is great.
Yeah,
to be able to share maybe with people who haven't had the experiences that you've had, and you've had a vast amount of experiences in your time of building these companies and just having ups and downs. And I think
it's all part of it.
I think a lot of people are also afraid to share the downs.
Yeah.
And the negative side to it, because, I think people look at that as that maybe, it makes them feel like, or they may feel like they're weak.
Right.
Have you ever experienced like that same?
Yeah. So, for sure. Like when, it was interesting. After I sold, NetDriven, I went through a period where I really struggled with, anxiety and depression. And, I think a lot of it was a result of really overworking myself for a very, very long period of time and burning myself out. And it took me on a journey for a number of years where I really explored the world of personal development, spirituality, mental health, and which led to my next business. But I spent a good number of years, almost full time, taking classes, learning different techniques, doing workshops and retreats all over the country. I probably worked with like 20 different coaches, did all different kinds of workshops and retreats, some of them plant-based, some of them, most of them non-plant-based, and really learned a lot about myself. And I think that was a really eye-opening period of my life because in some ways I had... and I don't mean this to be arrogant, but like conquered the external world, right? I kind of gotten to a point where I had more than enough money that I would need and all the physical things that I needed and really felt like I had a handle on, the physical world and the external world. But the next challenge was the internal, right? And I think that's something a lot of us never get to is really like, we live with, I think, the equivalent of a broken ankle or a sprained arm for our whole lives. And in some cases, because we don't address it, it gets worse. But there, it's very much like our physical health. We have to spend the time to go in there and do it. But the tough part is it's an unseen part of ourselves, right? So it's easy to see, oh, my finger's broken, right? You can see it, right? And it's measurable, where what's going on inside is a little bit, you've got to use a different way to look to kind of see that. But it's probably, you know, in terms of our overall happiness and success, it may be even more important. You know, it's, you know, even when I think about like net driven, I hadn't done a lot of that type of work before, but I had started meditating about 5 years before that. So I did a meditation retreat. I tend to jump into things like with both feet. So I did, never meditated. Then all of a sudden I did a 10-day silent meditation retreat in this retreat center in the Berkshires in Western Massachusetts. I think they wanted to kick me out because I was talking. There was like a cute girl who was there. I was single at the time. Yeah. She was single.
And you got distracted.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time talking to her and they kept, you know, telling me to be quiet. And they're like, why is this guy here? He doesn't belong here.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like
he's not following the
typical
rules.
Type of person that would show up at this. But, you know, that I kept that practice for a number of years. And it really did. I think it quieted my mind because I, you know, was diagnosed with ADHD when I was younger. And, you know, whether or not that's a real thing, I'm not sure. But definitely I had a very busy mind. And as I quieted my mind through meditation, you know, it became more clear, you know, what I needed to do, where I was actually skilled. And I gained clarity that and confidence that I could go out and start a business. So I would say, you know, that as a personal development practice really preceded my first business entrepreneurship success. And then following selling NetDriven, even did some deeper work around individual purpose and some other practices related to internal family systems / parts work, and worked with different coaches and other kinds of like plant-based, nature-based, you know, retreats. And that really opened up a whole new way to look at things. You know, I think there was a lot of shifts in terms of how I view the world. And one of the big ones, and this is one that, you know, I think a lot of people suffer from, is they look at things as an either or, right? As opposed to a both and.
On the Stacks will be back in a flash after a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Elevation Wellness, NEPA's premier wellness center located on Mundy Street in Wilkes-Barre. From pro athletes to busy parents, Elevation Wellness is leading the conversation when it comes to bettering your health through integrative medicine. Founded by NEPA native Louis Helmecki, Elevation Wellness offers physician-formulated and guided treatments that are administered by registered nurses. To learn more about how you can experience the benefits of IV vitamin therapy, multivitamin booster shots, non-invasive aesthetics, or peptide, NAD, red light, and compression therapy, visit elevation-wellness.com or follow them on Instagram at elevationwellnessNEPA. All On The Stacks listeners will receive 10% off their first purchase with code STACKS at checkout. Call 570-762-9400 or visit elevation-wellness.com to book your appointment today. Elevation Wellness, taking your health to new heights. This episode is brought to you by Burn, the fitness company behind the Today Show approved Burn Board. If I'm being honest, working out can be a real chore, especially as a new dad in desperate need of sleep and cardio. Burn is founded by NEPA native Jimmy T. Martin, and his Burn Board offers a low-impact core and cardio experience unlike anything I've done before. They have hundreds of on-demand workouts that are great for beginners, seasoned athletes, and out-of-shape podcast hosts who love supporting small businesses. My wife and I use it pretty frequently throughout the week, and it's honestly a great way to burn a ton of calories without burning a ton of cash. Not to mention, it's a great tool for skiers, runners, wrestlers, and hockey players. Jimmy is offering all On The Stacks listeners 15% off when they use the code STACKS15. Visit theburn.com today to get 15% off your purchase with code STACKS15 at checkout. Again, that's theburn, THEBRRN.com to get 15% off your purchase with code STACKS15. It's time to get on board today with Burn.
We drive the same roads you drive. We face the same danger you face. When you're involved in a car or a truck crash, it's personal. Because we live here and raise our families here. We're invested here.
To learn more, visit Anzalone Law Offices online at anzalonelaw.com.
And now we're back on the Stacks.
So, and this it was a great shift for me because I always thought like, oh, I could either be successful in business or, you know, be a great dad, or I could either, you know, have this or that. And now I really try to look at the world like I can do it all. Now it requires, you know, maybe doing things differently and taking more risks, but I'm finding that it's actually working, right? I can be an awesome dad. I can be a great entrepreneur. I can be a great partner. I could be, philanthropic. I could do it all, you know, and you could do it all simultaneously. So I think that's been a new mindset and it's working. It was a little scary stepping out into that world, but it's definitely something where I'm finding that, yeah, you can have it all. But it takes, again, getting uncomfortable
for sure
to do it.
Yeah. So was this self-exploration that you've done, was it ADHD focused, like in terms of like trying to figure that out?
Like, I wouldn't say, you know, I don't like thinking about it in terms of,
I'm asking, cause I'm similar. I also have ADHD. Yeah. So like I'm still always trying to figure it out myself.
Yeah. I don't think, I mean, ADHD in fact, isn't necessarily as big of a problem as they make out. I think people have different, minds work in different ways. Like mine, is very intuitive, thinker. And I think that as an entrepreneur can be great because you kind of like, you can sense something coming that nobody else can see and get in front of it, you know? And in a lot of ways, that's actually probably more valuable than being just a logical linear thinker, which is also valuable. And I can do that very well too. But I think, you know, it's really more of like really understanding yourself. I think one of the things you've got to get clear on is like, everybody's got some level of emotional trauma from their childhood. It could be, you know, you fell and skinned your knee and you didn't have permission to cry about it. And what I've discovered about emotions is there's a book actually, and I've skimmed it. It's called Emotions Buried Alive Never Die. And it's like, I always thought, oh, I didn't, you know, I can just push that down and it's gone, right? It's like, it's gone, but it's not, you know.
Subconscious, yeah.
It's still there. You've got to feel it. You have to feel that emotion. So I think that's a big thing, is taking the time to feel all the unfelt emotions. You know, when I went through that process, there was a woman that I really loved and I dated in my my late 20s, and we broke up, and I was busy and I didn't have time to deal with it. I'm like, I'm just going to push that down.
Suppress it. Yeah, it'll go away.
It'll go away.
Yeah. Right? So we've all said that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And so this is, you know, you're looking at maybe 15 years later, I'm feeling those feelings. Like they were in there, and for a couple of days, it was rough, right? Just going through and feeling those feelings. And I think particularly for men, and this is, you know, somewhat related to what we do at the Guide App, we're taught to just push things down, right? I mean, and with the Guide App, we work a lot with folks that are either in the military or veterans or first responders. And in those professions, you have to, right? It makes no sense if you're a Marine in a firefight to get into your feelings. You're going to die, right? But when you're done, you know, then you have to. But the problem is you create a habit around repressing emotions, and then they get repressed over and over and over again for your entire life. And that kind of, it's like a powder keg. If you put enough stuff in the Hurt Locker, eventually it's going to blow up. And I think that's a big thing is teaching, you know, particularly men, because I think women are a little more skilled in this, but is how to excavate and feel their feelings when the time is right. Not when you're putting out a fire, not when you're in a shootout, not when you're on a mission, but when all that's over, making sure you're taking the time to do that, because that can cause a lot of emotional problems. And I think, you know, we look at, especially with the markets we currently serve, suicide is among the highest rates in the entire country. And I believe that's a big reason why.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and was this, you know, all this, did you learn all this during the exploration that you did prior after NetDriven?
Yeah, for sure. I think there was just a lot of different skills that I learned about understanding our inner lives that I just had never thought about. You know, it's like understanding that each person has a purpose. It exists, right? And, you know, whether we know it or not, but you can know it. And then making that conscious is powerful. That we all have values that we're operating from. And for most of us, we don't realize it, and they're programmed likely because of our childhood environments, but we can change them, right? That we can actually consciously choose them. But first you have to realize where you're starting from. And then you can create new ones if you want to. You know, about dealing with emotions, I think is another big one. But there's just so much going on inside of us that we just don't realize. And I think we're just on the cusp as a society of kind of prioritizing that and seeing that that's a very, very important part of being human and a very important part of living a truly happy and satisfying life.
Yeah. So when you, after your exit from NetDriven, you took some time to sort of explore and do all this, you know, self-improvement, right?
Yep.
So did you, you know, what was your plan? Like, after that, and you said to yourself, like, okay, like, all right, sold the company, and now, like, what, like, did you have a plan, or you just,
I wouldn't,
like,
say that. I, you know, sometimes I think we may assign,
because that's a weird spot to be in.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Well, good.
Yeah,
but
it is, because you know you get to a point where, I mean, really, I had at that point created everything that I basically kind of envisioned for my life. I created more money than I ever thought I would have. I was married. I have two great boys. Life, like, I'm like, oh, I've done all these things. And then, I realized that I also, paid a great cost, you know, emotionally and mentally to build it, but there's still more, there's still more to do. And there's a deeper part of myself that wanted to be expressed. So, and actually I feel like I'm getting off topic and I forgot what your question was. So,
so your plan after NetDriven, like, okay. like did you have a plan?
I don't think I really, I needed.
But no, but you were on the right track though.
Yeah, I needed to do what I did. I mean, again, I think we sometimes ascribe more agency than really exists to things. Like, we're like, oh, I had a plan and I decided this, you know, and in reality it was, there was really no choice. I had to do this. I was kind of in a bad spot. I'd burned myself out. I had to figure out how to, you know, quote unquote, fix myself. And then as I started to explore that, I'm like, wow, this is like powerful stuff. And then kept going to learn more, really explore it deeply and explore it broadly and learn how these techniques could be taught to other people. And started to experiment with, you know, using digital technology to deliver some of these services. I had spent, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars and like years trying to do this full time. And most people,
just for yourself,
just, well, right? For myself, but then
in the hopes of maybe teaching somebody,
but then also seeing, oh, wow, this is valuable. I want to learn this more. So can it be taught to other people specifically through digital technology? So, you know, starting to, you know, experiment with delivering this through digital technology because it's so hard to access. Like, you know what I mean? Most people don't have, you know, years to take off of work and the money to spend on doing some of the things I did. But, you know, anyone could log into an app for 5 or 10 minutes a day and start to kind of like, you know, go on this journey. So that's really all of that built up into what is now the Guide app.
So did you anticipate, like, when you were doing this, you know, for yourself, did you think it would evolve into what it evolved into?
Not initially. I remember I was terrified. The first thing I did, a program, it was actually a program for combat vets. It was initially designed for combat vets who had PTSD, and it's called the Mankind Project. And this program specifically is only for men. They have another program that's just for women, but they believe the emotional makeup of men and women are different. And how they teach it is very different. I had a friend who had done it, and he had thought, you know, big things, you know, thought it was really great. And I knew I needed to do something. So I, you know, signed up, I went down and did it, and I was terrified, but it really, wow. Like, you know, there's a saying in the world of personal development, there's like three realms of knowledge. There's what you know, what you know you don't know, and what you don't know, right? So what you know is like, I know my name's Patrick and your name's Bill. We both know that we don't know how to do brain surgery. At least I don't think you know how to do brain surgery.
I don't think so, yeah. Maybe I'll try tomorrow, though.
But there's a whole realm of things that you don't know. And a lot of those things are about yourself. Mm. And I think this is hard for people to fathom, like that there are things they don't know about themselves. And actually, there's a vast library of things they don't know about themselves. Mm. And that's the world you want to bring out. Like, and that exists in our subconscious and our superconscious. So like, if you think about it, our quote unquote ego, which is a really loaded word, but say if we take what we know, and we in that realm, there's information above and below it. And the more we can pull out of those realms, the more we start to see, we start to understand ourselves. And I think life has more, takes on more meaning, and we can make decisions and choose things that are really in our best interest. But it takes some excavating to get into those realms, like in how to get information out of them.
So why combat vets? Was there a reason that, like, when you
PTSD,
started this?
So I did that program. It was originally started for combat vets, but it was expanded. And when I took it, it was being made available to anyone. But
so it was PTSD focused?
No, it wasn't really PTSD focused. It was, I think it's really about unlocking, you know, some of the aspects that are probably lurking in our subconscious that we
some
need.
Of the traumas that are just, you know, as you said before, kind of just beaten down.
Those buried emotions. It's about getting that stuff out. And that's the same, you know, my belief is that's what PTSD is. It's like there are buried emotions that are just, they're knocking on the door.
We don't know how to
get access to them and feel them. So, and I think a lot of what we would think of as mental health things, even mild things like ADHD, there's a repressed element to it. And it could be like some kid stole my candy bar and I never cried about it, right? To, you know, my dad died or my mom died, right? And I never cried about that, you know? So you're really taking time to kind of get into that stuff. And it clears a lot of stuff up when you can kind of get in and feel those feelings and start to become aware of all the things that exist and that we don't know.
Yeah. All right. So explain the app.
Yes.
How does it work?
So the app, my journey kind of led me to experiment with digital technology to teach these things. And we did a bunch of different tests and I was so unsure that this was going to work. I was just experimenting and I was like, man, I think I'm wasting my time. This thing is just not going to work. And we started to do some experiments, and actually all of them came back really good. We had great results. So the app evolved through all these tests. And we now have this app where we're making it, our customers are some of the largest police departments in the country. We won an award from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, where they gave us $500,000 for our good work. And we're exploring some pilot options with them. And we just signed a contract with one of the largest statewide unions that cover firefighters. So we're going to be covering an additional, probably it's about 10,000 firefighters.
Wow.
But, and not to mention departments of all sizes all over right now, mainly the East Coast. And we're starting, you know, to move out West as well. But the app, the thing that makes it, I think, most effective is that it's completely anonymous. You know, as you can imagine, in a lot of these cultures, there's a real macho, tough guy kind of attitude. And it is often, you know, I think it's changing, but yeah, just suck it up.
It's a hard barrier to get past.
Yeah, yeah, just deal with it. Suck it up, which eventually leads to bad outcomes, but that's still kind of, you know, rub some dirt in it, get back out there. And for that reason, you know, people are hesitant to go on record and receive treatment for mental health conditions. In addition to the fact that in a lot of these professions, you may have, there's a fear that somebody's going to take my gun away. Somebody's going to, it may impact my career, right? And we offer a way for people to get help anonymously. So there is no record of anyone who uses the app. We don't know who uses the app outside of like what department they're a part of.
Interesting.
Yeah, but it you can go and you can get help, and it offers a whole new gateway for getting help to the men and women that we serve. So that's a big component of it. And then once you're using the app, you put into a small group, you can talk to your peers, you can talk to trained members of our staff. You can do micro learning. So, you know, one of the biggest complaints we heard from, you know, folks in these professions is like, I don't want to sit in a day long seminar. I don't want to sit in a half a day seminar. I don't want to sit in an hour long seminar. Right. And this is, you know, you go in, each lesson is about 2 minutes long. Right. So you can be sitting in your squad car. You can be sitting, you know, at the firehouse. You could be sitting at the VFW, and in 2 minutes you learn something. And then we also have the ability to schedule practices. So you can do, you know, create a schedule where you're going to be doing meditation.
Is it all self-guided?
Well, I wouldn't say it's self-guided. We use some algorithms based on a very general intake survey, where in the intake survey, we're very careful not to get too much information because we don't want to be able to pinpoint who anyone is.
Sure. But
you can put in an age range, which I think are like 10-year slots, a profession like, hey, I'm a firefighter, I'm a police officer, I'm a veteran. You know, what type of experience do you have with this kind of stuff? And where do you want to focus, right? Where do you want to focus? And then we will create a customized program for you. And then, so every day you're assigned tasks and related to using the things that are available to assign you tasks. And we've shown, actually, we did a study. I got to move around here a little bit. My back's getting tight.
Do a seventh inning stretch here, yeah. Right?
you know, we did a study with, I see you have a Wilkes-Barre patch over there.
Yeah.
We did
yeah.
a study with the Wilkes-Barre Police Department where we asked them to use it a couple times a week over the course of a month. And then the University of Pennsylvania, their Department of Behavioral Health, analyzed the data. And they're like, holy shit. Like, you know, the average person saw a 29% reduction in anxiety. 16% increase in motivation, 15% reduction in negative emotions, like all these great results in a very short period of time. So that was really amazing.
Yeah, pretty quick impact.
Yeah, pretty quick impact. And so that that relationship with Penn grew, and now we actually just are wrapping up a full-blown clinical trial, like, you know, just wow. like you would do for
it's pretty
a pharmaceutical.
Serious. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're going to write a paper. They're going to in a peer-reviewed publication on the results.
Penn.
Yeah.
Penn's doing it.
Yep. Yeah. Wow. It's Dr. Heather Nusky at Penn is doing that research, and we have, you know, it's I think it's getting to that point where I talk about where I'm valuable is like the rocket booster is getting it.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, we're coming back to this point now.
Yeah, getting it back in, getting it out of Earth's atmosphere, out of danger, right? So I'm, you know, starting to think about how do I transition away from the business and focus on what I'm good at, which is being the rocket booster. So we have our COO is going to be moving into the CEO spot coming up. I'm going to move into a chairman spot and kind of act as his coach. Behind the scenes, I think of it as being like the admiral on a ship. I'm not the captain, but I'm watching and giving coaching and learning to the captain, and that's kind of the role I'm going to take on, and then see what comes next. The one thing I've been thinking a lot about is I really do like this world of personal development and self-exploration. It's been fascinating for me, and I see such a need, particularly for men, to be able to jump into this to some degree. And do I write a book, you know, kind of based on all my experiences, both like with all the work I've done and all the classes I've taken and all the techniques I've learned and then all everything I'm learning as a function of guide, and put that into something that would really invite, you know, anybody, but I think particularly men, into, the world of looking, you know,
inward.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you should do it. I love it.
Yeah.
I feel like you can write a book just on your trip around the country. I feel like there's enough content there.
There is a lot of content there. My girlfriend is like, you're the original, reality TV show person. Because it's built yourself, literally. Yeah. The content is like, if somebody was a good editor, they could make like a reality TV show out of it. Because it was me like just goofing around interviewing people, and we even had sponsors. And
no way.
Yeah,
we had sponsors. My God, you're like way ahead of the game, man.
Yeah.
You were like this is a podcast way back in the day. Like, you know, I mean, we were talking a little before, and you're saying, hey, like, how do you make revenue? You know, where's your revenue come from, et cetera? And we were talking about it a little bit, but it's very similar to what I'm doing now, but you were doing it way before. Yeah, maybe before
that,
everybody.
What's that, like 25 years ago?
Yeah. So, yeah, no, that'd be really cool, man. I'd love to see you write a book about, you know, well, as you said, everything else that you've done. I think it'd be very fascinating to read.
Yeah, I think more, you know, as opposed to what I've done, and I love putting stories in there, but somehow too, like here's how you could do some of these things for yourself.
Yeah,
right?
Just some simple, easy.
Yeah,
you know,
and how we work, like how does a human being? I don't, you know, what one of the things I discovered is human beings have the, in a lot of ways, we're like, I hate to compare us to a machine, but you know, the analogy of thinking about how a computer works is actually a good way to help understand how a human being works. And there is an operating system. There's a core unchanging operating system inside of us. And then there's programs that we put on it, right? And those programs, a lot of them aren't very good, you know, but how do you uninstall those programs, or how do you fix a bug? Right. I mean, it's really I think what a lot of this comes down to is, and if you think about it that way, it actually makes a lot more sense.
It does.
You know, I've installed this program where I'm like, I'm a whiner, or I'm lazy, or I'm angry all the time. And I'm like, maybe I don't want that program. Maybe I want to install something, you know, I want to uninstall that, or maybe that program's got a virus and I need to fix it, you know, so. I think as I looked at it that way for myself, it kind of like, oh, that makes sense. And I can kind of go about that process and make those changes. It, you know, just makes it a little easier to understand.
Yeah, you know, what you just said kind of sort of just reminded me about, I kept seeing this clip, and I don't know how recent it is. I think it's somewhat recent, but there's a video, and I don't even know where, I don't know if it was a conference or what it was, but it was Elon Musk and Jack Ma, and they were talking, and the conversation, Jack said, I think said something, his opinion was that AI is, AI is, humans are smarter than AI. And Elon Musk disagreed and said, no, AI will be far smarter and superior to mankind. And they disagreed. And just, did you ever see that? Do you know what I'm talking about, or no?
I haven't seen it.
Okay, yeah. So like I said, I don't know how recent it is.
Okay.
But I just literally, I came across it again yesterday for, I think, the second or third time. And it kind of sort of reminded me, because you kind of touched on that same thing when you said machine and human, right, and trying to figure that out. And I mean, what's your opinion on that? Like, what's your take on that?
You know, so the way I think human beings work is we have different faculties, right? One part of what we're good at is sensing. So we're taking in information through our five senses, right? And if you think about a computer, it does that through, basically our inputs, you know, but also microphone, a camera. Microphone is like its ears. The camera is like its eyes. So computers are able to take information in. We can take information in. Computers are able to think logically. And in that way, I think as compared to most people, they're far superior, right? They can compute data, in a flawlessly logical way, much better than any human being can.
And without emotion.
Yeah, without emotion. But then that's the other part is now some people would say computers have some level of emotion.
Right, that's kind of where it's leading. Yeah.
But emotion is really, the purpose of emotion is to allow human beings to work together, right? So it allows us to relate to one another, form bonds, and work together for different purposes. Can computers do that? Maybe they can. And in some ways, you could have a computer that is the equivalent, it could be almost one entity that's across many different computing units, right? But it's thinking with a single mind, so which is very different than the way we understand humans working now. And then there's intuition. And I think the way intuition tends to work, the traditional understanding of intuition is it's seeing patterns in data. So if we think about like big data, we hear a lot about big data. Eventually computers will be able to analyze and see patterns in data far beyond what.
Yeah,
what,
and be able to compute that way faster than we can.
Way faster than we can. But then there's you can move into another part of it, which is I think there are parts of how humans work that we haven't really fully understood yet. And then the nature of a higher power and all that, right? So, and what is that? What does that look like? And are there parts of our brain where we're already, working in unison, right? Because I think there's the way scientists and philosophers would describe how human brains work is there are different levels of understanding. And it's kind of like, if you think about, there's like a 7-story building. And if you're on the first story of that building and you look outside and say it's in New York City, it's chaos, right? You see people running by and taxi cabs and cars and everything looks chaotic. But if you can go up a couple floors and you look down, things start to make more sense. And I think as we evolve, we'll be able to embody these higher levels of understanding. And I think at those higher levels, we'll see that we actually mimic a lot of the capabilities that are being ascribed to or feared that AI will make computers possible of doing. But all that aside, I do think all that will likely lead to a way for machines and human beings to potentially work together.
Coexist.
Not even coexist. I wonder if there's some way where we can augment what it is to be human, using some of these types of, computing resources. The really scary analogy is like the Borg from Star Trek.
Right.
But I think there might be ways that we can kind of leverage some of those capabilities in more integrated ways. But where I don't really think as much about the computers, but just I think about the evolution of human consciousness. Like how can it'll allow human beings to take on and maintain higher levels of human capability, because the way a lot of that works is if you're worried about survival, right, you're going to be focused on that part, using that part of your brain, which is a relatively kind of earlier stage of the human brain development. But then what computers can do, and through governments and all those kinds of things, is we can ensure that everybody's survival is set, right? In industry and computers can allow that to happen. It is happening. Like our, you know, the availability of food and all those kinds of things has actually increased quite a bit over the last couple hundred years. I think there's some fallacy that like, oh, it was so much better 100 years ago or 200 years ago, but that's not true. I think the quality of human life continues to elevate. And we'll get to a point where nobody has to be worried about survival. And then, you know, even now we're getting to the point where, you know, in the next 50 years, we may not even have to use the logical part of our brain on a regular basis. So then that starts to allow human beings to kind of take on and be something that's even in advance of that. And I think, you know, as that process continues to happen, right, and we machines can take on doing things that human beings have to do now, we may get to a place where, like, we're all enlightened. Like, it's just because that's the thing we can focus on, right?
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? So I think it will enable human beings to evolve and really take, you know, utilize all the capacities that we have in ways that maybe only a very small number of people can do now.
Interesting. I love that. Yeah. I love that perspective on that.
Yeah,
that's fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, I would tend to agree with that. Like hearing, you know, not that I wouldn't have, you know, if somebody else said that to me, I'd be like, oh no, you're crazy. But no, I mean, it makes total sense. Like you said, if you're able to sort, you know, not have to focus on that logical aspect anymore, then right. Where can you shift your focus? And,
yeah.
And it makes total sense when you explain it that way.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, the we're evolving in that. A lot of things like, you know, that we have to do now that we have to focus on, right? We have to focus on certain things now will just be done automatically.
It'll just be automated essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, Elon, they just came out with the robot and the new car, and I mean, it's and you brushed shoulders with Elon back in the day, right?
I did. Yeah, we both, so I transferred into Penn at the same time he did, and there was probably like 150, 200 kids that transferred into Penn that year. And, you know, he and I were in that same group. So, you know, there was a lot of programs and things like orienting us to acclimating us to the university. And we were doing that together. And back then he was just like this tall, geeky kid with the South African accent. And
yeah.
I don't think you would have ever guessed that he'd be the richest man in the world.
Right.
Or the second richest. I think there's one guy richer.
Yeah. But I think he's on his way to surpass that. I think by 2025 or 26, yeah. I think I just saw.
I think he was actually at one point the richest guy.
I think so.
And the guy from France kind of beat him out, and they go back and forth. But
Anyway,
he's got a lot of money.
Yeah. Right. Either. Yeah. One way or another. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, with the Guide app, with your business, is AI play a role in your business and how do you see it playing a role in the Guide app in the future?
For sure. So the gentleman I mentioned who's going to be taking over as CEO, he was the COO of a publicly traded AI business.
Which one?
You know what? What's the name? It was small.
Okay.
It was small. I could find out. I don't know right now, but definitely AI is definitely a big part of what we are.
That's cool to hear.
What we're looking to do. Sure.
Yeah, I love it. That's good. So yeah, I mean, like, I mean, and you're taking advantage of it. I mean, I think a lot of people don't, and I think that's a huge mistake.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of possibilities.
Yeah,
there's a lot,
I mean, there's obviously some bad things, you know, that possibly could happen. There's a lot of fears around it at the same time, but I think more people need to embrace and utilize. I mean, that's technology. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just a newer form of technology, and I think people need to really embrace it, man. Because I think it's something that, you know, could help us scale businesses, help us scale our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. It has tremendous potential, and it can be used for not so great purposes.
Right.
I think some of the fears is it'll get so good at mimicking reality that
be hard to tell the difference.
Yeah,
that's one of the arguments.
Yeah, and I think the other thing I could see is people will have relationships with AI and think they're human beings.
Yeah,
you know, because it's so good. They actually they created a piece of AI that was able to communicate with people and then pretend they were interested in a romantic relationship. And incentivize and entice the other person to send naked pictures.
And of course, I'm sure
and I think it was like 19% of the people it interacted with
engaged
and sent naked pictures as a result. So
that's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it some of those things are scary, but I think again, we can grow as a result of like opportunity and really wanting to do something. And sometimes we grow because it's painful. And I think it those types of experiences, people will start to wake up and start to become more discerning.
Right.
And be able to see through what's real and what isn't.
Yeah. All right. So the Guide app, if anyone's looking to, look into the platform, get involved, join, like what do they need to do? Where do they need to go?
So we sell subscriptions to organizations. So you can't go sign up.
Like, okay. So it's not like a one-on-one. So it's okay.
It's organizations. But if you do have an organization, and we're expanding our reach to work with folks in other industries as well that may want to explore getting a license to use for the people in your organization, you can go to theguideapp.com. You can learn more about what we're doing, contact one of our sales reps if you're interested in that. And again, that's theguideapp.com.
Any last piece of advice for maybe any younger entrepreneurs out there?
I think entrepreneurship is a lot about learning. And I think you've got to give yourself some room to make some mistakes. And it really does help to work in a traditional job for a little while just to build the basics, discipline and skills. But also, sometimes what happened with me is my first company, I worked at my family's business, and what I saw was, wow, this industry is got some real opportunities.
Some holes in it.
Yeah, right. And I think my business idea came out of that. So if I hadn't worked in that industry, I wouldn't have saw the opportunity to do what I did. So sometimes, working for other people for a while gives you some great learning.
Yeah.
And then gives you an opportunity to save some capital. It's nice to be able to fund some of it yourself.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've all done that.
Yeah.
Was there anything earlier on before we end, like in your career as an entrepreneur that like you look back and say like, ah, shit, that was a mistake that I made that, hey, I learned and maybe I could pass that knowledge on to somebody else. Is there anything that comes to mind?
Lots and lots. But I think one of the big things I didn't do with my first company is, we didn't have like advisors or like more experienced people around me. Mm. And I was the majority shareholder. I was the CEO and I didn't have like any board of advisors or anything like that. And I wish I had, cultivated some folks that could have been looking in and maybe giving me some advice. I didn't raise outside money. Even raising a little bit of outside money, having some people in there with me, I think without giving up necessarily a lot of ownership or control, like all those things, I think it's good to build a community around what you're doing and having some support that can be a great thing. And I think I would have, if I had done Net Driven again, I would have probably done that. And then also having people around that can shore up your weak spots. So I never hired a COO, and I did that early with Guide. And that was such a big mistake because I ended up doing a lot of the COO stuff myself, and I'm just not good
at it. It's not one of those parts of the business that you're like,
I don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy it. And I think that kind of burned me out a bit.
Well, but you learned.
That's it.
Yeah. So, and I'm sure, everybody else that's listening, watching can obviously take a lot away from, your experiences and hopefully implement some into their lives, personally and professionally.
Great.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming in today. Next time, part two, we'll dive full. I'll review the footage of the UFO, and then we'll dive full into a future episode of just all aliens, I think.
All right.
If the people want it.
Sounds good.
All right. Patrick Sandone on the Stacks in the Sweat 10 studio. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
If you want to see more On the Stacks content, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/onthestackspodcast or search the hashtag On the Stacks on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn.